bit by bit, putting it together, piece by piece. Only way to make a work of art. Every moment makes a contribution. Every little detail plays a part. Having just the vision's no solution. Everything depends on execution. Putting it together, that's what counts.
Welcome, you're listening to Art on the Air. WVLP 103.1 FM. It's our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. Hi, I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City. We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and our landlord, Walt Breidinger. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic technical building, call Walt at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. We'd like to thank them for their generous support. Always thanks out to Greg Kovach, WVLP station manager. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts or arts-related event or exhibit or even appear as an artist, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Hey, our program along with programs are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast Mondays at 5 p.m. You can hear our show archive at breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. Also, we have a listing of our arts event calendar at that address. Our shows are also carried by WIUN. Red Hawk Radio at IU Northwest is a closed circuit station. How to support our station? And here's how you do that. You know, we are looking for support, because this is a community-based radio station, from individual listeners, show-specific, or show whole station underwriters. We'd be happy to have you come part of the WVLP family, supporters at any time. Esther and I would especially like you to become part of this program, Art on the Air. We have various funding levels. You can go to wvlp.org/support and give in whatever amount you can, whether it's $300 a year, and we'll mention you multiple times, all the way up to larger amounts. So that's wvlp.org/support. We don't want you to just be a listener. Become a supporter and underwriter of the station, because don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. Well, today we have a very special program. This is an encore presentation with a Dunes theme. We have a couple of guests. The first one is the authors of Saving the Homes of Tomorrow. That was broadcast on February 22nd with Robin Carlasso and Teresa Bonovich. And then we had of Dig the Dunes, Eve Wersbicki, and she was on January 11th. And then we'll be talking about themes that are Dunes related. So let's listen to this now in this special encore presentation. We're excited about our guests today.
We are.
They are the authors of a great book that I have. It's Saving a Century of Progress. And if you don't know what that is, that's these beautiful homes that are out on in Beverly Shore, but they're part of the national, we used to say Lakeshore, but now it's our Indiana Dunes National Park as of the 15th of February. So the 61st National Park. So we're all excited about that. But I'd like to introduce our guests, Teresa Bonovich and Robin Carlasso. I also know her as Robin Beeson from going to high school, so we were way, way back. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
So first of all, let's talk a little bit about how you got to collaborate on this wonderful book.
Well, it was really serendipity, quite honestly. We were asked to become board members for the Dunes National Park Association quite a few years now. And just for our love for the Dunes, it was a perfect fit. And we bring our expertise to the table. All the board members bring their expertise to the table. And, of course, ours is marketing and creativity. So we bring all that to the table. Once we were exposed to all the things that the Dunes had to offer, that's when we learned about the Century of Progress homes. And we're just blown away. There's a tour, an annual tour, where people can actually go inside the homes and see all the work that's been done. And the first tour that we were in, and chime in here, Robin, it was amazing.
Well, and people came back and they wanted to know more. The docents do a fabulous job. They are so schooled. They know these homes. But they wanted more. And they wanted to know, like, how did this even come to be? And we thought, well, we needed to give them more. And what we found, it even astonished us. Those homes, that they are still there, and the way that, in the shape that they're in, they're living museums, basically.
That's true.
And they weren't. I mean, they came, they brought them in 1934 across the lake.
How fantastical is that?
I know. And just put them on the beach, and said, go.
Well, let's talk about like a little bit like even before they came there, where they were, because I don't know if everyone knows how they where they were.
In 1933, Chicago hosted the Century of Progress. It was like a World's Fair. And these homes were part of thousands of individual buildings. And this was all about the changes in architecture and the changes in building materials. And there were just literally thousands of structures down by the Museum of Science and Industry. Mm-hmm. And what happened was is that most of these, they were built as billboards you could go into, but I mean, they weren't meant to last, technically. I mean, so many of them were torn apart, I mean, and just dumped at the end of the tour. But a gentleman by the name of Bartlett had this vision that he was going to develop Beverly Shores as, I mean, he created Beverly Shores and wanted this, and it was serendipity. I mean, all the different things that happened that made it so that he met the guy that did this, that was working the South Shore. I mean, he owned the South Shore. And so all these different things, but these houses came, and he decided that they would be his promotion.
Right, his marketing tool.
Well, and you know, the dunes themselves, I mean, it's been way more than 100 years that people came to study botany, and mm-hmm. it's such a unique environment. Yeah. So there's so many things to say about this, but that was like the most, and people lived in those homes without foundations or anything like that. And then there was a decision made in the 1990s that they should save these. These are the last living structures from the 1933-34 World's Fair.
And the World's Fair, I guess, kind of, you know, what used to be Meigs Field, I'm a pilot, so I used to call it still that, but Northerly Island, it covered that and the entire coast for the World Fair. You have a great graphic in your book that shows that. So, right.
I can't even imagine anything on that scale now doing something that.
No, yeah. I think that we have opposition to that, like what happened with Amazon in New York even. So, but so anyway, how do they arrive on the shore?
So they actually barge them across the lake. And can you even imagine that? And you know how we get the ice shelves now in the winter? This was going on when they had...
They did it in February.
Oh, my gosh.
Of 1934. I was crazy.
So you know there's an ice shelf. They finally get the barges over to this side of the lake. And then you have the obstacle of the dune.
Oh, yeah.
You have to bring them up. They had to take tree trunks to kind of roll them up the dune and get them where they could at least, where people wouldn't be listing when they were living in them.
And then they settled upon Lakefront Drive, which we have in Beverly Shores,
right.
That's where they are now.
And so then they kind of tell us, like, they've been sitting there for quite a few years, and then what happened with them?
Well, in the 1990s, their Indiana Landmarks and the park came together and created a program to save these homes. The Park Service would never be able to spend the kind of money that it would take. So what they asked was, they asked people who were interested to come in, have a long-term lease, but put all their own money into restoring these homes, and they have to be historical. So it wasn't like you couldn't just slap a Pella window in there. You had to do it with they were historic.
Right.
And they built foundations for these homes, and so that's an additional expense. And the foundations, like in their basements, that's where the leasees got to have some freedom.
Right.
Because those weren't, they're not structurally significant. So they were able to do that. But then these homes and what they have done and their stories are
amazing, incredible.
We were so blessed to be able, they agreed to let us come in and give us access to talk to them and interview them and have a photographer take pictures for the book. And
the way this works, I mean, as Robin said, they started talking about this in the 1990s, so it ended up early 2000s is when they actually formed the agreement. So these properties exist in the national park, and the Indiana Landmarks leases the buildings from the park, and then they, in return, do sublease them to the lessees who, in exchange, fix them up. So can you imagine having a 50-year lease?
Well, Esther and I think before the show we're talking about, boy, you'd fall in love with your house, and then all of a sudden you're gone.
Yeah.
Because 50 years goes by pretty fast.
It does, quickly. But there's, you know, always an opportunity to continue to negotiate. You know, they're always looking for folks. In each lessee brought something to the table. They had some expertise. So, you know, is the average person going to be able to do that? For example, the Beatties for the Florida Tropical House. There's a beautiful iron staircase railing that goes in there, and part of it needed to be replaced. So who perfect than Beatty Machine in Hammond to fabricate the part that was missing? So now it's whole.
And that's the wonderful part. I know a lot of the materials are not, you can't find the historical materials, but you do have to come as, you know, it needs to be as close as, I mean, it needs to be historical, even though it's not the original material.
Well, and on the one that's next to the Florida Tropical, the raw stone, they actually had to find a new material that would mimic the old material, because raw stone, it was a factory in Lafayette, and it failed. They had to keep making new iterations of that material. And
which only had not even a 20-year lifespan. Yeah,
exactly.
And especially with the harsh winters up here, you have to think about how the houses are faring against the weather on the shore. So there's that added extra element. So, yeah, the raw stone was replaced with permastone, and it's absolutely beautiful right now. It's amazing. Ross Gambrell is the lessee for that particular home, and he's done a fascinating job. He's restored all the original floors, put all those pieces back in piece by piece. Again, inside, beautiful. And as Robin mentioned earlier, they took a little creative license, for example, on that lower level. They're allowed to do that. And in Ross's in particular, there's a home theater in there and a nice kitchen and, you know, walks out to a great outdoor kitchen, that type of things. But
I'll be glad to see when the dumpster leaves finally, when he's actually done.
Exactly. We're waiting for that too. Well, and at the Cypress Log Cabin, they actually took advantage of the hurricane because they needed new cypress timbers to replace the ones that the raccoons had feasted on for a while. And so what they were able to do is they were able to, you know, log them over and put them back in. Okay. And it's, every story is fascinating. They're just the nicest, kindest, love where they are kind of people. It's like they're on vacation. And I think that people here may not realize, because they drive past them, they've become used to seeing them. People come from all over to see these homes. There's 3 million unique visitors at the national park each year. And a lot of those people come, and they definitely want to see. And if you stay spending time out there, you'll see people just driving by, because they want to see these homes. You know, at Beverly Shores did have many other structures that came from the World's Fair, but they burned. It was the Colonial Village.
I know. Right.
And then there was another small section of 5 homes, and those burned too. They had a big bog fire in World War II. So anyway,
and people come for the depot too. There's like so many train enthusiasts who come through for the depot. It is,
and to have it as a working structure where you literally get on the South Shore there and enjoy the museum when it's open, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, in fact, they have their 5x5 exhibit coming up. And so, and by the way, we're on WVLP Art on the Air. And again, if you'd like to be on the air, Art on the Air, WVLP@gmail.com, and send us your art information, everything. Again, we want to thank Walt Breidinger and, of course, our Brower Museum for supporting the show. So, can you go? We've talked a little about those. Why don't we go through each of the homes there? There's 5 of them there that are part of the Century of Progress, and then there's some down the road that you might repair. So.
Exactly.
The favorite's probably the Florida Tropical House, because I know I photographed that multiple times.
It is one of the most photographed homes in the world.
Yeah.
And you would think it would be like the Biltmore Mansion. And that gets a lot of press, too. But people, I mean, it's a gorgeous home, and it just stands out. It's just spectacular.
It is the most recognized.
My quick story on that is one of my photographs was in an exhibit, and one of the men who worked on the renovation purchased it and gave it to the Beatty family.
So my photo is hanging
probably somewhere in here. I think he lives in Munster and is Munster. And he called me and thanked me for the wonderful photograph. So.
How nice.
That's very nice.
Well, and your photographs of that home are spectacular.
Well, thank you. Well, I've discovered the correct angle to shoot that home from. There's really just shooting it slightly on the western angle and everything. And if you catch the light about mid-afternoon, not where there's some shadow and everything. That's the best way, because I've shot it in wintertime and everything. And I've tried other angles, and I look at them, like, but yet that's something about the lines in that house from that angle just jump out. Similar to the one that you have on the cover of your book, actually.
I was just going to say that, exactly. It's a beautiful angle to get it at. And, of course, that one is, that and the Rawstone are actually on the beach side. The other three homes are up on the dune across from the street, but all on Lakefront Drive
there. Yeah, there used to be a whole, in fact, the depot had an exhibit that showed all the homes that used to be on the beach side. And, of course, the National Lakeshore National Park no longer allows any building on that side. So.
Right. Well, and there were problems with, you know, the Red Lantern when that fell into the lake, and changing in currents and that kind of thing. But yes, in this particular enclave, there are five historic homes. The Florida Tropical, which we've talked about, the Cypress Log Cabin, the Armco Faro, which is between the Cypress Log Cabin and then it would be the House of Tomorrow, which isn't done yet. That's the one that we would really like to help like promote a little bit, because they're looking, Indiana Landmarks is looking for a person to invest and be part of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. The House of Tomorrow was the one that had the airplane hangar. It was all glass, and it was fine in the winter because it was insulated, but summertime it was like an oven. So they've got some new things that they'll allow them to do that are not historic, but they'll work better. And then you've got the Rawstone and the Florida Tropical. Those are the five. And then we'll pick up on the homes that we're going to do as beach rentals. They're historic homes that we are working to rehabilitate so that people would actually be able to come out and spend a week or a weekend at the lake.
Oh, that'd be great. Now, the leases, I've heard variably, is 50 or 30 years. Which is it?
It's 50-year
lease.
It is
50-year lease.
And same thing with, you know, the House of Tomorrow. What a great opportunity. Now, you have to have a few cool million to be able to restore it. However, it is for a long-term 50-year lease, which is really fantastic.
And they can't sublease it to anyone else. Nope. That's my understanding.
Correct. And this is, talk about modern. When you're talking about all these Century of Progress homes, they were each representing or promoting a new material, construction material of the future. So here in the House of Tomorrow, you had floor-to-ceiling glass. And so you have 360-degree view of everything, which is really cool. But one of the most unique features, and is still futuristic, is the garage was actually an airplane hangar. And that was what they thought the House of Tomorrow, you know, was going to be.
We'd all have our own airplanes now.
Absolutely.
We'd they just thought be, for sure
you know,
we would.
Open the garage and, you know, boom
George
right
Jetson
in.
Out.
Exactly.
Well, and one of the pieces, though, from the House of Tomorrow that will be waiting for whoever is the lucky leasee is an aquarium that they found in Wisconsin, that just came up, that somebody saw it and found it. And then Todd Zeiger, who is the local guy from Indiana Landmarks, went up and said, sure enough. So he's got
the actual aquarium that was
wow.
in there. So good thing somebody realized it was architecturally significant and didn't get rid of it. So it was just in storage all that time.
And the architect was from that area. And so that's probably how it found its way.
Exactly. This was designed by noted Chicago architect George Keck. And during the House of Tomorrow, the World's Fair, it was so popular that people actually had to pay an extra 10 cents just to take a tour.
Because the other ones did cost like 10 cents each.
Wow.
And there were Purdue students that lived in the Ross, wasn't it the Rawstone? That they, because they needed a place to stay while they were there, because, you know, Chicago would have been quite expensive for the students who took the 10
Of course,
cents.
Now Beverly Shores is pretty expensive to live in, too, so.
Yeah.
I guess barging those homes over actually accomplished what he wanted, the development of an entire community on the lake.
Originally,
Eventually. He had plans for a hotel and a casino. It's actually, if you look at some of the older renderings from his vision, it's quite garish looking. So good thing that.
That didn't happen.
Exactly. But, you know, it is a shame that the other homes were lost. But it's taking a cue from the Century of Progress homes and their leasing program that was the inspiration for what we, the Dunes National Park Association, want to do next. along the same front drive, Lakefront Drive in Beverly Shores, is the Meyer House. And that one is right across from Kimmel Beach. It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
That's one of the structures that we're looking to rehabilitate first. Then there, obviously, they're the Solomon Enclave, which is at the complete opposite end. And there will be 6 units. So if you had, for example, you want to get together with family reunion, everybody could have their own units, which is really quite lovely.
And they need to be used.
Well, and the goal on this is that not all of us have $3 million to put into a house. But, you know, for $1,000, $2,000 for a week, you get to stay and you get to have that experience in this historic home without it breaking the bank.
And helping the dunes out.
Yes, there's no place here in this national park where you can stay in the national park itself. So this will be the first place that you'll be able to do that.
That's tremendous. So you can see the development of those homes. Now, yeah, again, these new homes, well, first of all, do you have membership in the association to, like, contributions that people
would
like?
We do. We actually have a capital fund drive specifically for this. So if you want to reserve a spot for one of the rentals, you can donate to our capital fund drive. We also very much encourage folks to become a member. We obviously have several different levels and thank you gifts on that. But there's so many people that are passionate about the dunes, mm-hmm. So please join our cause.
So how? Where's the website or contact information if they'd like to join?
DunesNationalPark.org. If you go on our website, the slider on the top right now leads you to the Capital Fund Drive, so you can look at the different levels. Membership is also there. These books that we're talking about, Saving a Century of Progress, are available on the website, as well as we commissioned Mitch Markovitz to do a beautiful South Shore poster for us.
Okay.
So there's those as well. And our friends at the Depot, by the way, also carry the books and the posters, as well as the Eastern National Gift Shop over at the Dunes Tourism Center.
Yeah, it used to be on Amazon. I was looking that up before the show and said,
yeah. It was on Amazon.
But and how many copies of the book did you print?
Oh my goodness. There's several thousand.
Okay.
Was printed, you know, and some of these are given as gifts. And others are, you just sold directly.
And it's surprising because the book's been out a couple of years, but people still, I mean, we get some like every week, you know, we're selling some more books or people become members and get, you know, a complimentary copy.
It's an extremely attractive and usable book. I mean, it's just, each page is so interesting, filled with a fact or a timeline, and it's just about all
color photography in it, you know, from cover to cover, except some of the archival photos that are in there. And yeah, it's a beautifully done book.
It's a beautiful book.
60 some pages. I counted through it when I was going through it, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And it is a paperback, but it's what they call it folio size, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice, it would make a nice coffee table book. So if you want to put it out.
Well, and Teresa and I wanted to do something where the proceeds would go to the Dunes National Park Association for the restoration of these next group of homes. And it was really a labor of love.
It truly was.
It was so, a little chaotic towards deadline, but yes, it was great fun.
All proceeds do benefit the Dunes National Park. We are the Friends group that raises money for park programs and projects like the one that we're working on with restoring the homes.
Now, what's your relationship with like the Save the Dunes also?
There are many friends groups and each has like a different goal. Some are more environmental or more lobbying and advocacy. So,
and then you've got the Dunes Learning Center and, you know, obviously there's
great programs
aimed at
there.
School-age children and education.
And we had Yvonne from Dig the Dunes and make mostly about using the dunes and activities in and around it. So,
you know, but yes, this is an incredibly diverse area for the environment and for
so alive.
It is. I mean, and in changing. Like when people like the idea of living dunes until they understand it, they're like, what, they live? And it's like, yeah. They move. I mean, eventually 12 is gonna, they have to rethink that because Mount Baldy.
Right.
They've slowed it down, but it hasn't stopped.
No, it's still moving southward. So, yes. Well, I was in a program called Leadership Northwest Indiana, and we heard that I can't remember the superintendent at the time, and I always kind of thought that, well, if you got to the dunes, this was kind of like, you weren't a really great superintendent. And he made a point, says, no, this is one of the few non-contiguous parks or lake shores that you have to manage, which makes it much more difficult. And he says, actually, it's kind of this mix of not just being out like Yellowstone or one of the huge parks, but it's a much more difficult thing to manage because of that. And then you have all these other little areas that you have to oversee.
Well, and the urban nature of it, too. Right. So many parks were just plucked out of green space. You know, and so they kept them the way they were, like Yellowstone. Yellowstone was never developed, you know, as an urban.
Right.
And the idea, though, that we have hit this stride where we're all able to appreciate each other and understand that, yes, industry has a place, but so does the environment and so does the park.
Yeah, having them live side by side. And there are times you kind of wish that you had a beautiful lake shore that went all the way from, like, the Illinois border. Because we don't have that much of Lake Michigan frontage when you think about, like, Wisconsin and even Illinois and everything. We have a very little bit of frontage, and how much of it we sort of gave away to industry. But that was, you know, this part of Northwest Indiana was the last area to be developed, really. I mean, the rest of Indiana developed, and because north of the Kankakee River, it was just pretty marshy, you know. It was like, we don't.
But you hit a good point on that it's not just the lakeshore.
No.
The national park includes Pinhook Bog, right, for example, which is much further inland. The Chelberg Farm. We got Maple Sugar Times coming,
right,
up.
That's coming
March 2nd. Very excited about that.
Well, and did you know we have many more varieties of orchids in the national park than they do in Hawaii? People think of Hawaii as orchid,
sure,
capital, and it's just not. I mean, we have so much here.
Yeah.
Or have you had a chance to walk on a bog?
Right.
It is such a unique experience. And just to see the flora, it's truly amazing.
And, of course, Carl's Bog, I learned, is a fen.
Yes, not a bog, a fen.
It's not a bog, it's a fen, but it's called Carl's Bog because it's a fen.
And what you're walking on these bogs, it's millions of years old.
Sure.
It hasn't been touched. I mean, it's millions of years old.
So people
should probably... And at Carl's, there's like wild blueberries if you go in August. They're very delicious.
Yeah, and then the sandhill cranes that they come in, and then you have the... of course, is there many herons in the Herons Rookery anymore, or have they kind of shifted?
They've been doing okay, but I'm wondering, too, because there is one in Highlands.
Yeah.
Rookery over there.
Yep, and you can bike path right by it. I know I've done photography there, and you can see all of them and see the babies up there picking their heads up and everything. And, of course, I live in a lake that has herons on it, so I don't have to go someplace if they come to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we're just about ready to wrap up here. We thank our guests here.
Thank you so much.
This has been great.
Thank
the Idea
you for
Factory,
having us.
But also the great book, Savings, the Century of Progress. And if you've never seen where those homes are, you just go down 12. The way I do is, if you're coming from like the West End, you go down, I think it's East State Park boundary down to Lakeshore Drive.
Park Road, yep.
And you can see the wonderful homes there and see how they're developing and everything like that. Which brings us to our current guest. And many of you may know her from her work, but it's Eve Landsman Wiersbicki. Did I get that correct?
It's Wiersbicki.
Wiersbicki, got it. Okay. Eve is from Northwest Indiana, but originally from Evanston. But she grew up in Chicago, but she's also moved to Michigan City. And anyway, the big thing that she's part of is Digging the Dunes. And she will tell her a little bit about what that's about, what they do, and how they support Northwest Indiana. So welcome to the show, Eve.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your background, first of all.
Like growing up background?
Well, yeah. You came from Evanston.
So, grew up in Chicago when I was young. And then my family moved to Long Beach. And I was there through high school. Went to IU in Bloomington. And then after I graduated, I had an art history major.
Okay.
And then graduated and went back to Chicago, where I worked at several advertising agencies, worked for my dad, who was also very much into the arts, and stayed there until we adopted our daughter and moved to Ogden Dunes. And we've been in Ogden Dunes since then.
Do you live like on the lake there?
We live across the street from the lake.
Okay, it's pretty close then.
We're safe if the lake comes up a little bit. Maybe we will be on the lake soon.
Very good. So you studied art history. So how does that influence some of the things you're doing now, like with your studies in art history?
Well, everything, you know, right now I'm very much into more of the photography, but through art history, it just gave me an appreciation of everything, all the different art that's out there.
I have to ask every photographer, are you a Canon shooter or a Nikon shooter?
I'm actually an iPhone shooter.
Well, there you go.
Your photographs are wonderful. I love when your photographs pop up. They're great.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Well, that's okay. I always tease the Nikon shooters because I'm a Canon shooter. So, well, very good. And you were living in the area, and tell us a little bit how Dig the Dune started, and how the creation of it happened.
Sure. So it started. My daughter was about 2-3 years old. I had a dog. We started walking around the streets of Ogden Dunes, and then that got a little boring. So we started venturing out to some of the trails, and I started discovering the different beaches. I've been here for so long and just never realized how many different beaches and trails there were. I knew about the state park, but didn't know about all the other places. And so I started taking photos of the beach, and people really liked it, and so they wanted to see more. So I started giving them more, which brought my curiosity out, and I decided to keep looking for more places to take pictures, and so that's really how it started.
Yeah, very organically. It's so beautiful when your passion then becomes what you focus on for your work.
Right, right. And then also, in the meantime, I'm a graphic designer, and I do some advertising for some of the local businesses, and so I got to know a lot of different people in the community, and I wanted to help them with their advertising, and I realized Dig the Dunes, the Facebook page and the website, was a great place to help promote them. And so I've been able to do that as well.
And then you're able to hire really talented writers as well to write these. The articles are so interesting. And
right,
I
and
love
a lot,
the daily messages.
A lot of people just came to me, and then I asked them to submit an article and see how it resonated with my followers on Facebook. And if they really liked them, I said, come on, let's write some more. And so, yeah, between photographers and writers, I have a great group of people that I work with. And they're all outdoors people, so that's great because they'll go different places and they love to do it, and then they just share with me. And
we had Matt on the air like before Christmas, and so
I love Matt. I was just texting him. We have a couple ideas in the works for some great articles,
and they will be great articles. He writes.
He's amazing. He is. He's one of my favorites.
So your background in advertising. Before we get more into Dig the Dunes, tell us a little bit about what you've done, like in Chicago, and what you did with your dad.
So when I started, I graduated from IU in '89, and when I started, there really wasn't a whole lot of computer stuff. It was just getting started. So I was back in the days of keylining, where we were letterpress, did some of the letterpress type, and just really got in right when it started. It was Quark Express was the software that we used, and just started doing different ads. Started at an art studio called the Art Bunch that was in Chicago. And actually Mark Coleman, who now lives in Beverly Shores, I knew him back then. He was an illustrator there, and now I use him for projects as well. He just designed a shirt for me. And then I also did advertising at a direct marketing agency, a couple other smaller places, just working for a bunch of different clients. I actually designed a Sears credit card that they used for a while. That was my claim to fame.
Well, and now that'll be a nostalgic claim to fame if Sears goes under us, unfortunately.
Day by day.
Okay, and what did your dad do then? He
So my dad was in advertising, and he's also was an artist. And he was known for the parquet butter commercial. So okay. That was his claim to fame, as well as he had a part in the McDonald's You Deserve a Break Today campaign as well.
Wow. And they still live in Long Beach?
No, my dad passed away over 15 years ago, and my mom is now in Florida.
And you said she might be listening to us.
She might be listening. Hi, Mom, if you're out there.
And you can listen to us on streaming if you're having trouble hearing us over the air at WVLP.org, and this is WVLP 103.1 FM. Yeah, so we are talking to Eve from Dig the Dunes and many, many other things. So what exactly do you do with Dig the Dunes?
So I wear a lot of hats with Dig the Dunes. And I found that I sort of move what Dig the Dunes does with what my interests are. So like I said, we started with the photos, and we're always going to continue with those daily photos. I love to go out. It gets me out. It gets me out on a walk every day so I can go out and see the beach and the lake. But I also really started getting involved in events, which I'm really enjoying now, and I have a lot of people that help me with that as well. And then, of course, we have the calendar, Larry, that you know about as being a calendar winner.
Oh, how about that?
But just it's just really anything you can think of that will help promote the area, I would like to be involved somehow with that.
So you really Dig the Dunes is a real promotion for the Duneland communities and everything.
And it goes from Whiting. We like to promote Whiting all the way through St. Joe, Michigan, into Valpo, Crown Point, Michigan City, of course. I'm very familiar with a lot of the businesses in Michigan City, so sometimes we seem to promote them a little bit more, but we are open to lots of other places all along the dunes.
It's pretty expansive what you're covering with Dig the Dunes.
It's very exciting because there was the art fair, there are classes,
so we're doing the events, and we also do, I heard you mention one of the wine and canvas type classes. Mm-hmm. We do our own classes like that as well.
You need to send that to us.
Last year, we had a really popular one. It was a beach glass, and we put an epoxy over it, and we had all kinds of different mermaids, and everybody's came out different, and they were selling out like crazy. So now we're trying to think of what we want to do for 2019, something similar like that. We've got a couple ideas in mind, and we should be releasing some ideas soon. But we are doing in Valpo at Lambstone Winery, the new winery here, we're doing a beach glass wire wrapping class, and that's on February 10th, I think, Sunday, February 10th.
Make sure you send that to us so we can do that.
No, there's only about 10 spots left. So
okay, well, yeah.
People, if you're listening and you want to do it,
February 10th at 3 p.m.
Yes.
Where would they find out the information at?
It's on the Dig the Dunes Facebook page in our events, as well as on Eventbrite, and I think it's also on Lambstone's page as well.
Very good. So if you're interested in doing some of those things, now you have a thing with Dig the Dunes called a passport. Can you explain what that's about?
Yes. So that was released last year, and it's a membership or a passport program for Dig the Dunes, and people who are a member become a Dunie. And with that, they get discounts at a lot of local places. They get a special newsletter, e-newsletter that comes to them, and we have meetups, free meetups that you can go and hike with us, or we did one where we just had a meetup at Sunset Grill, and everybody got together and chatted, and just different fun things that people can do. They get their name on the Dig the Dunes page on the Dooney wall, and we're going to... So the first one ran, and it's the passports are going to expire in April, and a lot of people got passports, but we haven't had a lot of them filled out. And everybody gets a prize when they fill it out. So people, Dunies, if you're out there, make sure you get those passports stamped. They had to go to about 10 different locations and get it stamped, and then they get a prize. So we're thinking next year we may not do the passport. We may do more of just a membership ID card, but still get all the same perks.
Oh, okay.
And have some fun stuff.
Yeah, punch it out. Yeah. I know, by way of disclosure, I'm also an advertiser on the Dig the Dunes. So.
Yes, you are.
Yes, New Perspectives Photography.
Yeah, and small businesses, it's very reasonable price.
It very much so, and gives you more exposure. And being not from the Duneland, I lived in Highland and worked in Munster most of my life. So trying to establish a presence here more than everything. You know, I've been here about 3-4 years, so I'm trying to expand that. So with Dig the Dunes, you also have partnerships with other things, I think, like Save the Dunes?
Well, I am also on the board of Save the Dunes, and I am the fundraising chair for Save the Dunes. So they, every year, their signature fundraiser is Jammin' with Save the Dunes, and it's at Guy Forman Amphitheater in Michigan City. It's going to be June 1st this year. It's always such a good time. We're lining up the bands. We just picked our headliner, which is the Waco Brothers, and they're awesome. John Langford is the founder of it, and he's well known in Chicago music scene. And we have some other really good bands, but I can't announce those yet because the contracts have not been signed. But that's always a really good time.
Oh, that's great. Now, what's their mission, since you're on the board?
So their mission is to preserve the dunes and Lake Michigan and the watershed. And I'm more about promoting. Of course, I want to preserve as well. But sometimes people do get confused because the names similar. So if you're looking to help and donate and volunteer your time and possibly throw some money their way, it helps. They do an amazing job with just staying out there and making sure our dunes are protected.
Probably right now more than ever with the government shutdown that we're going through. There's probably some of them are out there preserving the dunes more than ever.
Right. And actually getting groups together to, well, I know with the National Lakeshore, the bathrooms are closed. And, you know, it's really hard right now. I remember a couple of years ago, the trails were closed as well. Those are still open. The trash is getting bad. And there are some great, I know the Dunes Learning Center was out there helping to clean as well.
I remember the last shutdown, they actually blocked off the parking at the lake overlook on Beverly Shores.
Okay, they actually had a wire crossed. Right, I remember
I'm like,
that.
Why would you even do that? They didn't do that this time. So that's good. Save them. Now, are you involved with other organizations also?
I help out with Shirley Hines Land Trust as well.
Okay.
More with just different promotions that we do. Last year, I did a scavenger hunt with them at one of their trails, and then in the summer, I do a series of beer runs, which is going out and running and then going and having a beer afterwards. And we used Ambler Flatwoods in Michigan City and Meadowbrook, which is where their main offices are. So they're always really fun to work with, and they're a great organization as well.
That's great. What's maybe plans for some future expansion in Dig the Dunes? Anything or just?
I kind of just go as the wind blows.
What's your interest?
Is that how you say? I do have. So we did the Mac and Cheese Fest last year, which was huge. Mm-hmm. We had 12 different restaurants that came, a bunch of bands, and about 750 people. So I've been talking, and I do have a couple ideas in mind for some other more festivals that are larger like that, which I think one may be coming in April.
And you can't tell us anything more about
it? I can maybe tell you. We're thinking,
just a little bit.
Buffalo wings. Just think about that.
Okay.
There are some wings maybe might be involved.
Yep. Yeah, because you have a chance to promote to our large, expansive audience.
I know. I just want to get all the details in order before I say too much.
Okay. Well, that's always a good thing. So with Dig the Dunes, I'm an advertiser. If they want to advertise in that, what tell us some of the benefits of that.
We have several different ways you can do it. We have our homepage banner ads, which I think we only have two spots left for that. But that would be to advertise there. It's $800, and that's good for the whole year. They can switch their banner ads out as many times as they want. We have a new partnership Trailblazer program, and that's $250, and that would get someone on our partnership page, as well as get with everything. Everybody who advertises with us, we promote anything they would like us to promote on our Facebook page. So if they have something, an event coming up, just let us know, and we'll go ahead and share it. And then the directory listings are only $60 for the year, and that is on our listing page, and again, we will promote and help share anything that way. And then new in 2019, we're really pushing our event marketing. So if somebody has an event coming up, we can now spread it across all our social media platforms and share their event. And we just reached 11,500 followers on Facebook. And we have, I think, almost 3,500 on Instagram and close to 2,000 on Twitter. So we can reach a lot of people.
Very good. Well, you answered the question I was going to ask, is how many social media platforms you're on.
And we stay active. And a little bit of Snapchat, not a whole lot yet, but really working with the Instagram story, which you can get very artistic and creative with that one.
You're listening to WVLP 103.1 FM. We have Eve here from Dig the Dunes, and you can find them on the web at digthedunes.com or
digthedunes.com.
.com or on Facebook with Dig the Dunes.
At Dig the Dunes, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Dig the Dunes.
Very good. So if you're interested in becoming a Dooney, that's one of the best things, and there's a lot of things that they're you got coming up doing that.
Yes.
So with Dig the Dunes, is there any organizations? I think there's in Indiana or something like that, or in
there's the Incoast, and that is Jenny Softened. She was a neighbor. She's now moved to Chesterton, but we do a lot of stuff together as well. We have done some Facebook Live videos together, and just are really, you know, we feel, people sometimes say we're competitors, but we feel like you need to work together in order to succeed. So we help each other out as much as we can.
I think she, when you posted that you were being on the show today, she said, put something like a remark like superstar or something like that.
Yeah. So we're always promoting each other. When I had, like, I had a holiday bazaar, so I wanted her to be there. And then there's the region wear guy, Kevin, and he actually designed our logo, the Dignidunes logo. So,
which has been changed, because I originally put up one of your older logos
on
the
site.
Yes, that
was the older one, and when I see that one, I don't like it anymore. So, so I just want to keep that new one.
I think, because I have a link on my website that links back, and that was the logo I had. So I had it in my file, so I'll change it on my website too, but I didn't. I wanted to fix it for you so you'd be okay with it. So let's talk about something more like in the controversy. I know, like with the Dunes National Lakeshore, trying to get that to be a national park. You know, what are your feelings about that?
I think it's a great idea, actually. And it's funny because I did notice that Save the Dunes posted something about that. And it does. It brings a lot of people are for it and people are against it. I know some people think it's going to bring tons of people here. But really, it's just a name change.
Right.
It is a national park. It's just called the National Lakeshore. And I think we're a little bit different because it's the National Lakeshore, but it spreads across such a wide area.
It's not contiguous.
It's not just one park. And I think just having it be a national park will get more notice for it, good, and possibly more funding and help, you know, to keep it clean and
built. Well, a national park status, I know, becomes a permanent thing, which is approved by Congress, where the National Lakeshore, like a national monument, is a presidential thing, which could be changed by the president. Yeah, I mean, so that's the big difference, is it will solidify its status as a park, and that's not generally revocable once you have a park status.
Okay.
And so I think that's a great advantage to it. And I don't know if it would bring that many more people, but the dunes are unique. And I learned this a long time ago, kind of what you talked about when I was in Leadership Northwest Indiana. I always thought someone getting signed to the Dunes National Lakeshore was like a punishment for the superintendent. You know, it's like, oh, well, you know. And they explain, they said, no, this is actually a unique park. It's an urban park that's non-contiguous. It's got things all over the place. And it's actually a very unique park to manage. So it's not like one of those things where, well, you're not very good as superintendent, we're going to send you there. It's actually kind of a sought-after thing. Actually, Indiana has really no national parks in it. We have a National Lakeshore, and I think there's a Henry Benjamin Harrison's monument, his house.
Okay.
So yeah, it really raises status. Now, but you're probably familiar. How's the relationship with the National Lakeshore with the state park?
Well, I was going to say, as you were talking about this, that it's funny because I get a lot of people when I'm talking about the dunes that will say, "Oh, I've been to the dunes," you know, or "My family went to the dunes once," and they don't even realize. They think that the dunes is the state park.
Right.
And they have no idea that there are all these other trails and that the lakeshore, Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, is all these other places. So I think the state park and the National Lakeshore work together, and their relationship is fine together. But it's just a matter of, and I've tried to help educate people and let them know that the state park is not the dune. You know, it's right. The Indiana Dunes State Park, and they have some wonderful trails and great programs, but there's just so much more around here, too, to see. And it's funny because in the summer I'll see the line on 49 going out to 12 for people getting into the state park, and I wanted to say, hey, go over like a couple blocks that way and you'll see the same thing.
And it's free.
And it's free.
And free is good. Well, they have to work together. They share a welcome center there on 49, just a little bit north of Chesterton and the expressway. So
yes,
the state so if you want information on both, it's right there in one place.
Right. One place in the National Lakeshore that I think is underutilized is the Douglas Center, which is in Miller.
Yeah.
And I even did not go in there until a few years ago and went in and talked to some people and realized they have snowshoes and cross-country skis you can that are free for people to just go in, take it, rent it out, and use it if we ever get some snow this year. People can do that. It's a great educational place for kids. And then Miller Woods is one of my all-time favorite trails to go out there and take a look at that. So there's just so much people need to know about it, which is why I become so passionate about it as well, because I get out to these trails and I see them and I see the beauty and just want to share it so people know it's out there.
Yeah, and you've passed that along. I mean, I've watched the growth of Dig the Dunes every year. It just gets fuller and more exciting.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks. That's good to hear.
You know, one of the controversies about the state park is the banquet center. Now, I'm kind of from... I'm still new enough to
You're
going to
make
be...
me talk about that?
Well, I mean, you're going to educate me. I mean, I really don't know... understand what the either problem is with it, or you know, I because new I even asked friends of mine and I'm not sure I understand, so maybe explain what that is.
I can, to the best of my knowledge, what happened was I think some things were a little sneaky about how they went about it, and I really think people would have been okay if it was just taking what is there already and renovating it. But they started talking about this huge banquet hall that they were going to put up and blocking the view, and it was ugly, and they were using politics, using specific people. I personally, on Dig the Dunes, try to stay out of any kind of politics, so I remain kind of quiet on it. I wouldn't mind a... Dig the Dunes likes beer and breweries and things like that. I wouldn't mind if there was a nice... restaurant there that had a great view and was another place to go. But I think the way things happen and how they went about it, they need to figure things out, and they need to just hopefully just utilize the building they have.
Right. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I don't really understand the controversy. I'm just tuning in.
I've heard both sides, and I'm really kind of in the middle about it all. Some of the plans I saw were outrageous and crazy, and I don't know what these people were thinking, and I don't think that's going to end up happening because of the opposition, which is good. And then I also see the point of having something there, and it would be nice because there's nothing there right now. It's not being utilized. So if they could figure out a way to renovate it, that would be great.
It would be a new, you know, from my perspective, it would be a new revenue source. And like I said, I don't really know the whole story. So maybe that's a show for another day or another one to do.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, being not originally from the area, I've been trying to tune into that concept, and I wasn't quite
sure. It's kind of quieted it down a little bit. Yeah. A few years ago, it was big. But now things are at a hold. The last I heard was just under a year ago. And I think they had a plan for what they were going to do. I don't think it's all going to happen with what they had planned. And I know some people were worried about local businesses suffering, but I'm not quite sure how.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. From looking at it, it seems like, and not looking at the whole renovation plan, it would be nice to have something like that because it would be more income for the state park.
Right.
I mean, you know, and then you can use that for other things, you know, keeping trails. But not knowing all the other part of it, I followed a little bit, but I'm still unclear on that. Hey, let's talk, you know, since we touched on the calendar, that's one of your annual things. And so every year, how many years have you been doing that?
This year was the third year that we did it. And each year it keeps growing. We get more photo submissions. This year, I think, was the best one yet. I mean, we just had some amazing photos come in. People get so excited about it. I work with Izzy Ensley, who she's sort of been my right-hand man since Dig the Dunes started. She's been here with me from the beginning. She does have a full-time job also, so I have to get her when I can. But that is her project, and she's done the design for it, and she started with the contest and how to get the submissions in. And then we always have a calendar release party, which has been one of the best parts about it. We pick different locations and invite all the photographers to come, and we announce them and award them with a calendar and a little plaque. And it's just great. And everybody seems to like it. It comes right around the holidays, so it makes a great gift. And it's just a great way to give some of the different photographers from the area that are like-minded and love the dunes a chance to get their work out there.
The your last party was at?
SFC Gallery in Michigan City, and I loved it there. Right. They were amazing to work with, and we may just go right back there if we're invited next year.
And it was on a first Friday, too.
And it was a first Friday, yes. And it was a cold first Friday, but we still got people out there.
So if a photographer wants to submit things, and I know this is you've just finished this, but coming up next year, when do you start looking for submissions?
This past year, we did it a little bit earlier, and it worked out well. And I want to say it was around May or June that we started doing it. So you'll definitely, if you follow Dig the Dunes on Facebook, we also have a newsletter, which I would suggest there is a button on our Facebook page. If you click that, you can sign up for the newsletter. But it's a great way to stay on top of things because you don't always see the Facebook posts anymore. So, you know, that makes it hard. So with the newsletter, it just comes out once a week. It's very informational. It is an e-newsletter, and it tells all the things we're doing, and it would tell when the submissions are.
Okay. What are you looking for? I mean, I know Izzy's actually doing it, but what photos kind of are you looking for in general?
I will say, if anybody wants a better chance of getting in, we always get a ton of summer photos, and we always get photos right around the time that the deadline ends, because I think people run out there and do photos. So I want to say that's September, October we get a lot. We don't get a ton in January. We don't get a ton for February and March. So, and what we want people to do is they will submit 3 photos, and we like them to tell us which month the photo was taken.
Okay. But for example, now that you said that, you could have a great winter photo that was taken in, let's say, February, but you could use it for January.
And we have done that. Yeah, because when we do, what we do is it goes through 3 rounds of judging. It's all blind judging until the very end, because sometimes there might be a photographer that has 2 or 3 winners, mm-hmm. and so we can't have them for 3 months. So then we might move some of the photos around. So a January photo may go in February or something like that.
What do they specifically have to be, the dunes, the lakeshore, or what do you?
No, they can be the beach, they can be trails, they can, but that we want it to be something nature. Someone last year did a hummingbird at one of the preserves, so anything in the dunes area.
So fine. you could submit like flying herons or things like
that. Sure,
sure. No, wildlife.
Yeah, I'm already thinking for next year.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. We've had some different birds in there in the past. We had the hummingbird. We had we had a deer 1 year.
Okay, because I know I live on Lake Palomora, and I have a huge number of like swans and herons and things like that, which is part of the dune lens.
Yes, that
you're listening to WVLP 103.1 FM. Eve from Dig the Dunes is with us, telling us about what she's doing, her background from doing things in advertising and graphic design. So
you've been listening to Art on the Air, an encore presentation. I'd like to thank our guests today in this presentation, Robin Carilasso, Teresa Bradovich, and Eve Wurzbicki. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Mondays at 5 p.m. with your hosts Larry Brickner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, our station manager. If you're interested in being a guest, once again, you can contact us with your information at artontheair@wvlp.com. And we'd love to put your information on the air. Next week, we'll be back live on June 7th with Greg Hertzleave, the curator and manager of the Brouwer Museum, with the current artist that's in there, Corey Heckelberg. And they'll be talking about his exhibit and everything along with Brabant Lintling is also part of that exhibit. But they'll be on the show next week. We'll see you next week right here at 103.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha.
The art of making art is putting it together, bit by bit, part by part, fit by fit, start by start, stride by stride, kick by kick, glide by glide, stick by stick, side by side, by side, by side, by side, by side, and that is the state of the art.